wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
We're joined again by our expert, Dr. Kushla McGovern. How are you doing today?
Very well, thank you. How about yourself?
Good. Very hungry. It's been a very, very intense day over here at the station. The weather's not looking too grand either, but we have some very interesting topics today, don't we? Food waste and strategies for limiting food waste. I feel this is quite important, and it's, you know, we've seen a push for this quite recently.
Yeah, no. So this is, so there is a bit of a sustainability theme to a couple of the stories today, food waste and textiles. And this paper that we're talking about in relation to food waste is actually not a scientific research paper, but a comment paper, which was when you have some experts in an area that write their opinions, or they're making a comment, basically. And it is, because food waste is a major problem. It's actually really hard to quantify as well. So you'll see some very different numbers. So this comment said that it was estimated that 19% of food is wasted, but you will see reports of 30 to 40%.
Wow.
So that's, you will, a common number is more than a billion tons per year globally.
Yep.
And there's a kind of an estimate that about 60% of that is at the household level.
Right. Do we know what that's looking like here in New Zealand?
Yeah. So actually, there's actually been a report just recently come out in the last couple of months. I think it was, or comes out of the Ministry for Environment. And they've said that each person in New Zealand is an average of 230 kilograms per year.
That's crazy.
That is crazy,
that
right?
That is mental.
It's 1.2 million tons in total. What's really interesting about this, though, is they're saying that's like basically about 5 to 10%, but it doesn't account for exports, right? So we export a lot of food in New Zealand. So if we looked at it as like globally where our food went, and then it would probably be a bit higher as a percentage.
Yeah.
But 237 kilos a year, like,
that is ridiculous.
Yeah, it
that's
is
insane.
In New Zealand, it's also, they did say that actually it's a lot at the primary production stage. So because we grow a lot of food, that it's a less heavily weighted on the household level.
Okay.
So there is, you know,
so
there's a little bit of difference.
Lesser at a consumer level.
Yeah.
Than it is just,
yeah,
you know. Okay.
Consumer level still got problems, but yeah, no,
yeah,
a lot of, yeah. And so what this paper was really about was, you know, why is this a problem? Yeah, what's kind of going on? And so, because, you know, obviously it has a big financial cost, and
I don't know what that is. We'll sort that out. Let's just carry on, though.
Okay. And it does contribute to greenhouse gas emissions, right, with, you know, this food degrading and stuff, and just being waste in the landfill. And so the UN actually has its sustainable development goals, and one of them is actually to halve household food waste by 2030. And the UK, that does pretty well in this space, has managed to have a 22% reduction in food waste if you compare 2007 to 2022. So that's good, but it's nowhere near half, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
there's a lot of work to do. And so why is this such a problem? And it comes down to, it's very behavioural, and it's a complex system. And so this is always hard to change. You know, it's something you have to keep working at. It's not like, you know, with COVID, we could go and get vaccines and diminish the problem. It's still a problem, but it's, you know, it's not as big a problem as it was when we were all locked down.
Yeah.
Food waste, you've just got to keep at it, right?
Yeah.
You can't, it's not one and done.
Yeah.
You can't avoid it. We all need to eat.
Yes.
There's always going to be some food waste.
Yes.
And so that's part of the problem as well. And then it's just reducing something is always hard. So in the behavioral research, they use the terms approach behavior and avoidance behaviors. And so approach behaviors are easy to promote. So this is like, it's easier to encourage someone to eat well than it is to promote them to waste less food. And so because of these things, and the fact that it's got a variety of determinants, so you can think of it at an individual level. Maybe you just don't like the look of the leftovers in the fridge, so you don't eat them.
Yeah.
Maybe you're a family and you've got a child that's got a bit of a fickle appetite, and so you get the waste there. Or, you know, you have the wider environment. You've got no time, so you can't food prep, so you buy the takeaways and stuff.
Yeah.
And then these things all end up interconnected as well. You had a bad day at work, you just want some takeaways, so you don't eat the food that's in the fridge that you meant to prepare.
I understand that very well. That,
and all these things, right? And so this all contributes to this problem, and it's this complex system. And so what this comment paper is kind of is pointing out, that this is why it's difficult, and giving some suggestions on the levels with which this problem should be approached.
Yep.
And we are seeing some of this in New Zealand. As you said, we have heard a lot about this recently. The previous, Juliet Gerard, she is the Prime Minister's science advisor. I can't remember the proper title.
Yeah.
She did a lot of work. Her office did a lot of work around waste and stuff. And so basically there's six suggestions come to visibility. First one. Know how much you're wasting. You know, if you are reducing, like, see how effective it is. So you can think, we have these compost bins now, right, that you can put your waste in. So you can start to see your food waste a little bit more easily. There is a little bit of a catch to that, when sometimes human nature and behaviour is such that if we think it's being repurposed, so we're like, oh, it's going to compost, that's great.
Yeah.
We don't need to make an effort to reduce it now, right, because it's going to something else. It's not quite the right thinking, like it is still... all this energy that was put into growing this food or preparing it, you know, and that. So we do have to be a little bit careful with how we use those systems, but it's a good system, you can see. Comparison, like usually we say comparison is the thief of joy, but in this case, comparison is a good thing in terms of what would you expect? You're always going to have food waste, but are you having a lot or are you doing pretty well? And so, you know, we need to know what would be expected. And so this is... you know, generally going to be on a level probably beyond the household, and, you know, then it needs to be communicated. So whether that's government or community groups that do this. Things like understanding and opportunity was the other class they have. So this is your knowledge of labels. So best before versus used by, right? Used by is you use it by that date that's given because of health and safety reasons. But best by is because after that date, that's the best by date, it lowers in quality, but health-wise, health and safety-wise, it's still probably okay for a little bit. Motivation, so how do we influence how people feel about food waste and stuff? And so New Zealand's got some really good groups that are around this. There's the Aotearoa Food Rescue Alliance, which does a lot of work with a lot of other groups, like supermarkets and stuff, to try and minimise food waste and redistribute it to people who need it. Because this is what's kind of perverse about the problem as well.
Yeah.
We get a lot of food waste, but we've got a lot of people going hungry too.
Yeah.
And that's kind of dumb, right? Like, it's just dumb.
Yeah.
And so, and then looking at, you know, things like that apple is not really perfect looking, but it's still fine to eat, right? We kind of like that consumer behaviour and they're getting over that. And so regulation is another thing that, you know, and that's more government level. So, you know, we have these profit-driven systems that encourage kind of over-purchasing and over-consumption, right? So, you know, we all go to the supermarket. We love a two-for-one deal because we think we're getting a bargain.
Yeah.
But do we really need it? Are we going to eat those two heads of broccoli or did we only need one kind of thing?
Yeah.
And then there's just the, you know, the wider system goal, which is very much the government level, where the government's putting in measures and prioritising things like minimising food waste over perhaps economic growth and things like this.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Interesting. Now, I think we only have time for one more topic just because we're a little bit, we have quite a packed show today. But what I would want to talk about is the bacteria produce and colour fabric, because I had a quick read of that. Using E. coli to make rainbow dye, how does that work?
Yeah, so this is, again, sustainability, textiles, we have fast fashion, big problem, right? We all know this. It's something crazy like a single cotton T-shirt requires 2,700 litres of water to grow that cotton, which is basically one person's drinking needs for 2.5 years.
That's insane.
Yeah, and so there's been a lot of work around how alternative methods of production and stuff. And so often when we look at alternative methods of production, bacteria are our... where we go, these factories, right?
Yeah.
And so what a lot of bacteria can do is produce cellulose. Cotton is largely composed of cellulose. The bacteria do this to form biofilms and protective measures and stuff. But it comes out white. And so there's this group that went, okay, well, then usually we would have to take that cellulose and then we'd have to go and dye it. And that can be a lot of energy and processing and chemicals and contamination of soil and water.
Mm.
Bacteria also produce pigments. Why don't we use the bacteria as well to do this? And so this is where the E. coli is. Different strains of E. coli will produce different pigments, and they fall into two groups called vilosines, which produce your purples, your blues, and your greens. And then you've got other strains that produce carotenoids, which are your reds and your oranges and yellows. And so basically what they did was they just had a one pot. They put in a bacteria. It wasn't E. coli, but it was producing the cellulose. And then they put in their pigment producing E. coli, and it basically dyed the cellulose. And then they bring it out of the pot, and they've got fabric. Well, a dyed cellulose that they would then probably have to process into a fabric. But what they were able to show, it's pretty stable against acids and bases and heat treatment and washing. They do need to test its durability against like detergents and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's pretty cool because you could get your coloured fabric or material just out of a pot of bacteria.
It's just really kind of scary to think about. I mean, how many people out there would be keen to pick up a bacteria-coloured shirt?
But this is the thing. Like, we often think of bacteria as bad, like infection and everything, but they're actually really good for producing things and, you know, keeping out bad bacteria and all that. Yeah, so there.
So is this like a relatively new finding, I guess, that we could, you know, use E. coli to produce these colours in clothing?
So I guess it's... We've always known that they can produce pigments, but this is, I think, the relatively new that someone's kind of gone with this idea of, oh, we could actually produce enough of this pigment to dye like a textile-like material, yeah.
That's insane. I mean, I don't know. Vihan, would you want an E. coli-coloured shirt?
It's a pretty good colour I would wear.
Well, they are beautiful. It is the rainbow, and they're quite vibrant, so I was quite impressed.
Look, I expected to see them in AS colour soon, maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see. Well, thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Dr. Kushla McGovern. Thank you, MOTAT, obviously, and thank you, Science. Christmas lights at MOTAT. Experience Auckland's most magical Christmas lights. Heritage trams, festive music, Santa visits, and thousands of sparkling lights. Tickets are available at motat.com. Thank you once again, Dr. Kushla.
Cheers.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.